Good morning. This is Alicia Bales in the studio for a special Monday morning open line show. This time we'll be talking with First District County Supervisor Carrie Brown, who will be with us for the whole hour to talk about her work on the board and issues facing the county. This is our fifth open line show with the supervisors. Last month, we welcomed supervisors from the other four districts in Mendocino County. We've been looking forward to hearing from Supervisor Brown to round out our series. So we're excited to bring that for you today. And you can go back and listen to all of those interviews with all five of the county supervisors from Mendocino on kzyx.org, where we archive all of our local programming. This will be an open line show. I'll open up the phone lines around 11:20 for your calls. And the number in the studio here is 895-2448. And I welcome you to call in with your questions and concerns for the supervisor. It's important that she hear from her constituents. So, Supervisor Carrie Brown represents the 1st District of Mendocino County, an inland district east of Ukiah that includes Talmadge, Redwood Valley, and Potter Valley. According to her bio, Supervisor Brown is a lifelong resident of Mendocino County who's resided on her family's Potter Valley Ranch for the last 41 years. She served as the executive administrator of the Mendocino County Farm Bureau for 23 years, and she was elected to the Board of Supervisors in 2008. Supervisor Brown is currently serving her third term. She represents the board through numerous assignments, including the California State Association of Counties Board of Directors, the Eel Russian River Commission, and the Rural County Representatives of California Board of Directors, to name a few. This year, she also served as the board's chair. Welcome to KZYX, Supervisor Carrie Brown.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Your term comes to an end in 2021, so the 1st District seat will be up for election next year. Are you planning to run again, or is this going to be your last term on the board?
I actually have announced early on that I would not seek a fourth term.
So this, you're coming up to your last few months?
I am.
Wow.
I absolutely am.
Are you relieved? Sound a little relief in your voice there.
Well, it's certainly, I have certainly been honored to serve the county of Mendocino and its county residents. I just feeling that because of my age, I just don't run as fast, and I feel a county supervisor to do a good job has to be 24/7.
Yeah, that it does seem like all of you work all the time. What are the demands like for your job as a supervisor?
Well, there are many boards and commissions that we're assigned to, and there's also community events and meetings. Many of those take place at night or on the weekends, and a county supervisor should be there. The county residents want you there. And based on that, you also have to prepare for meetings. There's some pretty heavy issues that county supervisors must help make decisions on, and so you need to be prepared for all those meetings that come forth.
You've actually been the chair of the board this year, which is a rotating position. What's that been like? Do you have an approach? Does it help? Does it influence the effectiveness of the board's work? And how do you see your role as the chair?
I am chairing this year the County Board of Supervisors. This is my third time to be the chair. And I feel that a county chair must moderate any subject that's coming up before the board. You also need to get your input in. I'm the type of supervisor that I do my homework. I'm ready to go for my meetings, and I like to hear from the public, also committee recommendations, and also what my colleagues are thinking and suggesting on a path forward, whatever the subject may be. I think it's important that no decisions by, like myself, be made until everything is aired in a public setting.
Do you think that the chair can have an influence on the course of how things go? I mean, it seems like a lot of your time this year is spent calling on people and being very diplomatic with the public. And do you set the agenda, or what kind of influence can you have as the chair?
Well, I think the chair has a lot to do with how a meeting goes forth, whether there's dectrum and proper protocol and respect for everyone involved in whatever the agenda item may be. I also believe that staff needs to have the courtesy of bringing forth whatever their department has been working on and make recommendations as well. So it's a lot of back and forth, I guess is the best way to say, but at the end, decisions need to be made. But I, as chair, want to make sure that everyone has had their opportunity.
Do you, as chair, are you responsible for that interface with staff? How does that communication happen?
Well, many times we have supervisors that are assigned to different commissions and boards, so they do work with staff on recommendations coming forth, and hear staff at a more complete level than what a county board meeting may have. So that's why it's important to have respect for each other as colleagues. Also, we have a number of ad hoc committees plus two standing committees where deeper information is shared. And so it's really important that we all take that into consideration, because we might not be an, so to speak, expert that has covered every detail.
Well, I'm curious, because it seems like the Board of Supervisors, as the elected representatives of the people, come up with policy and vision and make the decisions about what's going to happen, and then the staff is responsible for implementing that. Is that right?
That is true.
So how do they keep track of all of the decisions that you guys come up with?
Well, during the course of the meeting, directives are given. And they're with these directives, they are monitored. And they're monitored by staff that keep the directives for us, so that any county supervisor can say, we gave a direction. Such and such a department was to be working on this. Nothing's come back. So, you know, where are we? And as chair of the board, it's the same thing. A little over a week prior to any Board of Supervisors meeting, the chair meets with staff to make sure that everything is on the agenda that needs to be, that is in proper format for the discussion, and that is just part of all the responsibilities that you have. But you do keep track. We have this directives sheet that comes forth about quarterly to give us an update of where each of the items are at.
And you've served on the board now for 12 years, but previous to that, you were in leadership at the Farm Bureau for 23 years. So you've been a woman in leadership in Mendocino County for a long time now. Seen things, and you're the only woman on the Board of Supervisors. Does this mean anything to you in particular? Have you seen things change in terms of being a woman in leadership in the county over the years?
Yes, I have. I think that we need more women in leadership positions. I believe that women bring forth a more diplomatic approach many times when you get into heated discussions or debate. And I think a woman's role is really important. And you look back, I can't remember if I'm either the fourth or fifth woman to serve in the history of this county.
Wow.
On the Board of Supervisors.
Ever, huh?
Yes.
Wow.
So a lot can change, I believe, when women are a part of the leadership.
What do you think that women bring to leadership? You said diplomacy, but is there anything else? Why is this an important thing? And is there something we can do to encourage more women to run for the Board of Supervisors?
Well, yes, I do. I feel that women should step up, and we've had candidates in the past running that were female for a county supervisor's seat. But I believe you must dive in to a lot of the details and be able to present that and your opinion or a position when running as a county supervisor to be understood that you can bring great dynamics to any type of meetings that you may have in that leadership role.
Are there any issues in particular that you have focused on over the course of your 12 years? Or what will be 12 years? I guess you're in year 11 now.
I will be 11 at the end of this year. And so that's one more year on the board. But I approached my position as people say, well, what's important to you? Well, I say everything's important that county residents feel is important to serve as a county supervisor. You must get out there. You must hear what they have to say and, you know, start making plans. Start talking about those subjects. And when I look back, I came on the board when at the height of the recession that we had. And it was an awful time. Tough decisions had to be made about the budget, how we spent our money, how we didn't spend money, because we needed to maintain a level, current level of services. But we found ourselves having to make a lot of policy decisions based on the hardship we were in. We had no reserves, no contingency. Today, we do. We're pretty much set as the policies that we made way back when in 09 and 10 have set us up to face a recession if it comes sometime in the future. So that was pretty tough. But I also, in 2010, we had a drought in Ukiah Valley. And I had one of my communities, Redwood Valley, that was faced with the drought and severe cutbacks in water that could be supplied by the county water district. Then I look at the historic drought in 2013, and representing our county on two state boards, it was 2013, December, first week in December, the governor came to speak to the CSAC board and also was present at the Rural Counties Association board. But the governor said, don't worry, I've appointed the state task force. We're going to go forward. Don't do anything yet. Well, the day after Christmas, I went on the website because I had heard nothing in 2 weeks. I saw that our area was not even a dot on the state task force map of reservoirs throughout the state. So I immediately got on the phone, put a bunch of water people together, the county, city, county water districts. We talked, and I was in shock at where we were at with water supplies. Immediately went in. We were getting the first agenda going for the first meeting of the year. I brought forth drought emergency proclamation, and we went forward. We were the first county in the state. We had some communities with 60 days of water. We had others with 30, and we had some with a little bit more, but something needed to happen. Action needed to be taken. But that's history on that particular one, but we were able to bring in $6.2 million in drought relief funds, and all county supervisors worked on that. But we found out that we couldn't receive state monies unless we had a CASGEM program. CASGEM is the monitoring of wells, and it had to be monitored in Ukiah Valley, but it would deny the whole county in receiving drought relief funds plus other funds from the state. So we got that program set up in a big hurry and still carry it on today. Then we had, in 2017, the complex, Redwood Valley Complex fire, which was entirely in my district, and the horrific cost to many of our county residents in losing everything, and some lost their lives. We turned around, went forward a year later, and we had the Mendocino complex fire.
Right.
And it was like, oh my gosh, what is happening? But there have been other important issues that we've had to face and that I've been a part of facing and addressing as a county supervisor. We had a crumbling infrastructure, our IT, our county buildings. We had aging vehicles within our fleet and our roads. And we're looking today at emergency services at all levels, and especially with our ambulance services. But, you know, there's other issues, too, that county supervisors need to address. We've got mental health, the local homeless population. We have been addressing new laws that we were mandated to address, like the legalization of cannabis. We had individuals, as a change in law, returning that were being released from state prison. And then we also had the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act that has impacted the Ukiah Valley from Redwood Valley South to Burke Hill. And we're having to set up a program, and we have an agency now that's Ukiah Valley Basin Groundwater Sustainability Agency, and I'm chairing that right now as well.
Wow. So, yeah, I see what you mean with the 24/7 job description.
Exactly. And knowing what you know, what's coming, what's going, what agendas, what work we have to do. But, you know, it doesn't stop there for a county supervisor. And as you know, we're looking at climate change, and we've got to get that committee going. And then we were recently confronted by PG&E, pulling their pre-application for the licensing of the Potter Valley project.
Yeah, that's what I would like to ask you about the Potter Valley project. It sits entirely in your district. You sit on the Eel Russian River Commission, is that right?
That is correct.
So,
and Mendocino County has a very unique position because we have both the Eel and the Russian River watersheds within our political boundaries.
And so for listeners, it's a very complicated thing, but for listeners who maybe aren't as familiar with the Potter Valley Project, can you just introduce people to the situation and some of the complications involved in it? It's a hydroelectric dam project up in Potter Valley, right?
That is correct. It is in Potter Valley. The origin of the water that comes through the hydro project is Lake County with Lake Pillsbury, and then it comes through the tunnel in Potter Valley to generate electricity as well as water supply. And this project, actually the water rights on it, I believe, were given around 1905,
mm-hmm.
and the project started being built at that point. Later, then that was the original. You have the Van Arsdale Reservoir by Cape Horn Dam. And when they realized that hydropower could not be generated enough, that's when they looked further upstream and Gravelly Valley. And then Scott Dam was built in the 1920s to further the electricity generated through the project. But through the years, it has been very controversial with many groups, and it is a water supply as well as the hydropower. One relicensing that started back in 72 reached its final stage in 2005, and at that point in 2007, as a result of the relicensing, the project was cut in half. So 50% of the water that used to go through the power generation facility, hydropower, was cut back that amount.
And that's because it's a diversion from the Eel River watershed into the Russian River watershed, right?
That is correct.
And so they were looking at balancing the fish habitat from the Eel River with the water needs of the downstream populations.
Yes. And that 50% loss, you have to think back to the droughts I talked about. And people were screaming when they were asked to cut 20% or 25%. But people didn't want to cut back. But I think we've all been on conservation now with our water supply because it is a limited source. And I think we all must be very careful of how we use the water. But with a 50% cutback, a lot had to change on the side of the Russian River.
And now, as you were starting to say, we're in a whole new situation with the Potter Valley Project because PG&E, who's owned it for decades, has now announced last year that they want to sell the project right in the middle of their new relicensing process. So Mendocino County has joined with a group of other government organizations and nonprofits to start to pursue the relicensing themselves. Are you part of that project through the Inland Power and Water District?
Yes. And to go back to what PG&E did, first of all, they said they had already started in the process for the pre-application with FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, but then they announced that they were going to put the project up for auction. And that is a process that Inland Water and Power Commission started going through with them, and actually Inland Water and Power Commission, among its member agencies, raised $50,000 so that we could get to the point of turning in what they call an indicative proposal, so we could get in the data room with PG&E to find out critical information about the whole project. 4 days before the indicative proposal was to be turned in, PG&E announced that they were pulling their pre-application from the FERC process, and we were all stunned. So, many of those interested in the Potter Valley Project and its future, several came together, and that was Caltrout as a nonprofit organization, a conservation entity, Inland Water and Power Commission for Mendocino County, Sonoma Water. We all came together to discuss putting together a planning agreement to go forth with FERC and actually send in a notice of intent that we were interested in taking over the licensing and the license for the project.
And this is just huge. What an incredibly huge, ambitious undertaking. Also, and now Humboldt County has joined in the planning agreement, right?
Humboldt County, there was a process going on that our Congressman Jared Huffman put together for a two-basin solution, and many partners at the table, by invitation only, were attending his ad hoc
meeting. Were you part of those meetings, Carrie?
Yes, I was, representing our county. And I've attended, I think I've only missed two, perhaps three, because of a conflict of schedule. But Humboldt County, immediately when the three entities joined, and they had in their planning agreement an opportunity for Round Valley Indian Tribe to also become a part. But Humboldt County wanted to also be a part of it. They went through a process. They are involved and parties to the planning agreement today. And Lake County has also gone through a process. They have dedicated, like all the parties, $100,000 as part of this project. And Round Valley Indian Tribe has gone through their process, and they are a member now. But Lake County has not been accepted yet by the steering committee, so that is in the making. But we also have other voices that want to be heard, other tribes as Dry Creek and also the Potter Valley Indian Tribe. So I don't know how many partners will be coming on. We've had to act very quickly, very seriously, put in intense time going forward with our indicted proposal, and that was accepted by FERC. So now we're in the process. We just recently had interviews for a consulting firm to conduct all the mandated studies as a part of the relicensing process. And we will have more meetings coming up real soon.
I imagine this is going to be a huge priority of your last year on the board.
Absolutely, and it has been a huge priority, actually, the last 2.5 years.
Well, let me reintroduce you. I'm Alicia Bales, and I'm live on the air with First District Supervisor from Mendocino County, Supervisor Carrie Brown. And this is an open line show. I'd like to open up the phone lines. The phone in the studio is 895-2448 for your calls and questions. That's 895-2448, and on any topic you have for the supervisor, although I would like to talk with you more, continue this conversation about Potter Valley, but we have our first call. You ready?
Yes.
Hi, caller. You're live on the air.
Hi. Thank you so much, KZYX, for putting this program on. It's very helpful and very informative. Are you there?
Yep. Do you have a question?
Okay, good. And thank you, Supervisor Brown, for your many years of excellent service, which I was unaware of, as many people around the county, particularly outside the First District, have been. I want, and especially for your leadership in the water issue, which I didn't know much about, I want to agree with you that we need more women on the board. It would be great if we'd have 50-50 gender parity on the board. And also, given the fact that we have so many Hispanics, Latinos, Latinxes in the county, it sure be great if we get that kind of representation on it, too. I want to thank Supervisor Brown for being at the Housing Action Team meeting last month at the library in Fort Bragg, at which time I talked a little bit about the homeless problem. We have on the coast, we have a Housing Action Team, but not a Homelessness Action Team. And what we need on the coast and in the county is several safe places for people, homeless people, to be, whether to park their vehicles running or not, or pitch their tents, or have some sort of shelter, and with porta potties and running water, and services as needed, and trash containers and trash and recycle containers.
We do have more callers, so would you like to let Carrie Brown respond?
Yes. Please respond to the question about homelessness.
Thank you for that, caller.
Well, first of all, I need to state it is an issue here in Mendocino County, but it's also across the state and across the nation. We have different groups that are working on this issue. We have public health. We have social services. We have a number of nonprofit entities working as well. And we have county supervisors that have been fully engaged. And coming to mind for Inland has been Supervisor John McCallan, who has really spearheaded much of this. I talk about all the issues that and matters that county supervisors have to cover. We can't all be experts in every one of the areas, but Supervisor McCallan has participated And it has led to, I think, some real positive movements as some dedicated buildings for the homeless population inland. And there are programs from, I'm trying to think of the coastal groups, can't think of their names right now, but there are funds being given to them to help house people. My biggest concern are for families, especially with children, that just find their luck is down and they get out on the street. But we do have programs, both coastal and inland, that I'm sure are going to help. Is there more to do? Yes, there's a ton of work to do towards the homeless issue. But if we keep working on it, have support from people like you and the community to keep our focus strong, hopefully we'll have a more healthy Mendocino County as a result.
Let's take another call. Hi, caller, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, you're live on the air.
Yes, good morning. I really appreciate KPOX taking the time to bring our elected officials on to be able to be directly in communication with the constituents. My question is pretty simple for Ms. Brown. She plans on retiring. There was quite a bit of distress when the Board of Supervisors gave themselves a 41% increase in salary, which according to the grand jury of Mendocino County is actually in violation of state penal code. I'm wondering, what is the retirement package going to be? And what is the bulk? I've noticed in Willits, the retirement commitment for the city of Willits per year is like $1,700,000. There's a lot of largesse going on in the county. And I would like the supervisor to address why anyone believe that they could give themselves a 41% pay increase when they've absolutely blown the cannabis program. Now the county, in order to recoup all the outlay for the over $100 million that they blew with ad hoc this committee, that losing all kinds of what they said were qualified people to run programs, now they're going to allow 10 corporations to come in and do 10-acre production of cannabis. I'd like the supervisor to address why she believes she deserves a 41% pay increase.
Okay, thanks for that question, caller.
Well, this county supervisor is short-term. But I strongly believed in the amount of salary that it was raised to would attract people that could be dedicated to being a county supervisor and being able to support a family. So that was my thought of going forward to get more people that would run for a county board of supervisors seat.
All right, we have another call. Oh, let's try another one. Hi, caller. You're live on the air with Supervisor Carrie Brown.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I'm going to try to go quick so we can get a bunch of people in today. I have some concerns that are not necessarily in her district, but seem to be heading towards her district. My concerns are there's a lot of trees that are being removed in the north end of Ukiah, and there's a lot of concrete being laid. There's a lot of vehicles now that are idling in an Outburger. It's one of the places, Raley's. And now we're going to open a Chevron station that is a mega truck stop. I'm just wondering how the supervisor or how the supervisors are planning on dealing with the amount of trucks who are probably going to be continually idling there. And how come we only required, like, some palm trees for a carbon sink? Is one of my questions. We keep getting tons of concrete, and they're cutting the trees down and not replanting any. So as we move north into the old Masonite site, I noticed that there's going to be a road that's being built there, and a bunch of large buildings with a lot of concrete and no trees. I'm wondering if those three, I think there's three or maybe four redwood trees on Ford Road just as you come underneath the freeway. Are those going to be allowed to stay there? That's my first question. My second question has to do with public transit mall. I think I've mentioned it several times in meetings. Asked for shovel-ready turnkey projects. We really could use a public transit mall. It helps save the roads. It allows people to go to school without having to have a vehicle and really get a good start. Also allows the elderly folks from Fort Bragg and the outlying areas to have a place to go to the public transit mall. It's just a really good turnkey project that helps save and bring money into the county. And so those are my questions. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that call. Supervisor Brown?
Well, first of all, I think it's more statements, and I appreciate hearing what that caller had to say. I was getting opinions from him. I do not know that any of the trees he spoke about, the redwood trees, would be taken out. Masonite area is industrial zoned and has been industrial for a very, very long time, and then it shut down, so there was a period when nothing was going on in that property. We had a local businessman step up, and because it's perfect, it's probably the most perfect industrial land that's zoned in the entire county. So welcoming new businesses that give jobs to the community is very important to me. We were able to also keep Factory Pipe that Mr. Liberty owns because he had to expand for the contracts he was getting. So that's the whole Masonite. Not sure what's all in the planning, but I'm just very, very happy that we're making use of that land instead of seeing it lie idle, because it gives jobs and opportunities within our community. The truck stop, historically, it has always been a truck stop. Yes, housing development went up and around it, but that was another commercial area, industrial area. Some of those businesses have moved out due to needing to find other areas that are not as close to housing development than that many people don't appreciate having industry next to them. But the truck stop has always been the truck stop as far as I can remember with idling trucks. Now, when we talk about idling trucks, we must remember that the state of California has, especially with the diesel, has banned old engines. So you have much cleaner engines today in most of those trucking fleets.
Are either of those sites in your district? Where does your district start?
Actually, the Mesa, and I'm laughing because it gets crazy in that area between the 1st District and the 5th District.
Oh.
I do have fingers in that go into Alexander Estates. My district stops when you turn on Empire Drive, but it goes all the way back to the high school to Despina.
Oh, wow.
And then you would go north to Lover's Lane, and then surrounding it, like with Ukiah High School and coming down through the vineyards off Lover's Lane, that is the 5th District. So then I go back out to North State Street and run North State Street all the way up to the Ridge.
Wild. All right, we're live on the air.
It's a crazy mix up there.
A jigsaw puzzle.
As county supervisors, we all work together. You know, we want to be county supervisors, just not districts. So
yeah.
I have found through my years on the board, all my colleagues want to work towards solutions for the entire county as a whole.
You're listening to KZYX. We are live on the air with Supervisor from the 1st District, Carrie Brown, and we're taking your calls. The number in the studio is 895-2448. That's 895-2448, and we have another caller. Welcome, caller. Oops, waited too long. Call back. Oh, and here they come. All right. Welcome, caller.
Yes. I'd like to ask Supervisor Brown to actually answer my question about the salary increase. She tried to posit that the increase would attract talent later down the road. If that was the case, why didn't they post the increase for an incoming Board of Supervisors rather than give it to themselves? And again, she didn't address a 41% pay increase, which is, in fact, as the Mendocino County Grand Jury found, a violation of state law.
All right, Carrie?
If it were a violation of state law, you should have brought a lawsuit forward that could be vetted in a court. The County Board of Supervisors, based on all the agenda information that came forth to us, basically acted under state code.
And did you have an opinion from County Council about that? Was there any
Absolutely.
Kind of questions
Absolutely.
About the legality at the time?
No questions whatsoever. The increase was rationalized. And to go back to that time, we had cut everybody's salary,
yeah.
all employees' salary by 10%. County supervisors voluntarily, with the exception of two, in 09, 10, up to about 2012, voluntarily took the same reduction, only they have to set the salary for a county supervisor, and you can only do it at certain times. And I can't remember, I'm sorry, I can't remember exactly what state code says, but that is what we did. It was rationalized in the board agenda item. If people can't accept that, that's the way it is. I'm sorry about that. But my hope was for the future. And as the gentleman said, to attract basically more talent as we go forward and have a salary that families can live off.
Well, the question, too, of parity, I know that you were looking at that time at what other equivalent boards of supervisors positions in the state get paid, was a little bit hard when other county employees were getting their wages cut. But now you're in the negotiations with all of the local unions about bringing up wages for the rest of the workers in the county up to parity. Do you have anything to say about that process before we take another call?
Well, we did do the cost study, and it has been a big concern. I certainly want to pay our employees a living wage. We've looked at the other electeds. We've looked at department heads. And, yes, we have other bargaining groups, all eight of them, that we're going through the process with. Just recently, we settled bargaining contracts with Confidential and SEIU, and they will be brought up to market as much as we can according to the cost study and the recommendations that came with that. Yes, it will be quite an expense to the county as we move forward, but our staff deserves
it. All right. Let's take another call. Hi, caller. Oops, missed it. Here's another one. Hi, caller. You're live on the air.
Oh, yeah, hi. Thanks for the show. Hey, I was wondering what the supervisors think and have to do with the incredible amount of redwoods being cut right now in the county, considering that the redwoods are best defense against global warming.
Did you hear that, Carrie Brown?
I did. And I'm trying to think how to answer her. Basically, we are a county with amazing forest lands, and as trees age, they don't do the carbon cleanup like much younger trees. We have been on quite a rotation since the early 90s, and some of this timber that needs to be harvested will be replaced by new seedlings and trees that grow that actually clean the air with their growing and taking in, you know, the carbon. And I think it's a very good thing what we're doing, because it also gives jobs, local jobs. California has the toughest forestry timber harvest rules in the United States. So I'm believing that those particular state agencies are overseeing all the practices. And I believe that the last 30, 40 years, we have timber that should be harvested.
Well, and I think the caller was asking about the rate of cut. Seems like there's a lot of redwoods coming out. At least that's what I heard him say. There's a lot being cut. I do see a lot of log trucks hauling redwoods right now. Is it true? Do you have any idea? Has the rate of cut in the redwood forest increased recently, like in the last couple of years? Because I know we had that we had the big corporations here, and then they over-harvested and had a timber gap where there weren't as many trees to harvest that were large enough to cut. They had cut down to a very small size, and then there was kind of a lull for a while, and Mendocino redwood came in. But now it looks like the harvest is back up, and I agree with the caller. There's a lot out on the road. Do you know anything about that?
I do not have exact information, but I believe you can go to California website. I believe it would be under Cal Fire, and be able to view all the timber harvest plans that have been approved for Mendocino County. It used to be that way. Haven't gone there for years to look. But all that reporting must be made, and it's public information which harvest plans are going on and what is being approved.
All right, we have another call. Hey, caller, you're live on the air. Can you turn your radio off?
I just heard somebody saying something on the radio a moment ago about the carbon sinks of mature trees compared to younger trees, and that's outdated information. In fact, all the studies that I've read recently have found that the opposite to be true, that mature trees actually sink significantly more carbon than younger trees due to the fact of their increased surface area.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Supervisor Brown, do you have anything to say in response to that?
No, because I haven't read that study. So I'm sorry.
All right, we've got another call. Hey, caller, you're live on the air.
Hi, yeah, I just want to make a correction. Obviously, the supervisor's listening to the timber industry propaganda, but an older redwood traps more carbon than a younger one, and it's just simple math, because the size of one of these things and a sapling, and you have to plant a whole lot of saplings. I mean, it's just... I think it's time for us to take a look at stop cutting, have a moratorium until we can figure out the climate. You know, the wood's going to be worthless if there's nobody around to use it. And that's where we're headed. So that's my 2 cents worth.
Thanks. We have hit a nerve now, and the phone lines are lighting up. We've got about 3 more minutes. We'll take the next call. There's another one. Well, they lit up and then everybody hung up. So, here we go. Caller, you're live on the air.
Hi. I would like to say I'm hearing my feedback. I don't know what's going on, but...
Is your radio off?
In the light of global... Are you there?
Yep, go ahead.
In the light of global warming, do you regret approving the hack and squirt destruction of our forests, resulting in their new designation as agricultural, which would translate into tree farms, eliminating all other non-monetary forest life forms and in its place? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you for that, caller.
Well, I certainly feel we have a disagreement here, but this is what I love about Mendocino County. We can all debate. We can all respect each other for beliefs, scientific reports, get behind what our feelings are, what our recommendations are. But I have no further comment on that. Hack and Squirt, that gets approved as a part of forest management plans that forest landowners must have, and the state does vet those plans and how they manage their land. Certainly, I'm not a forester. I'm not a biologist. But I have to respect the fact that hack and squirt is allowed on forest lands.
So the voters did pass an initiative trying to stop hack and squirt. They passed it by 61% of the vote. Are you against the enforcement of Measure V, or do you support it?
Well, we're going to get sued either way. The county of Mendocino will be sued either way.
So let the courts decide.
That's probably what is going to happen. We're wrestling with this right now and trying to figure it out.
All right, let's take another call.
Before we go off, I want to talk about the upcoming census count.
Great. Go ahead.
So, can I go ahead?
Yep.
Here's my appeal to everybody that's the listening public. Get yourself counted. We will have the census count going on here really soon. Mendocino County has missed out on thousands and thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands, based on being undercounted. Many of the funds we receive in the county, like for our roads, are based and paid on population. So if there's any points I can make today, too, I want people to get themselves counted. It means a lot to your county. And
right.
It's funding.
And with that, I have to wrap up the show. But thank you so much, Supervisor Brown, for coming on KZYX this morning and making yourself available to questions and telling us about your many, many years of service. And special thanks to Rich Culbertson for working the board and phone lines. And most of all, thanks to all of you callers for calling in. I love the discussion, and I appreciate you calling in with all of your questions and issues and all your differing points of view. So thanks a lot, Supervisor Brown.
Alicia,
yeah.
I want to say thank you, too, to all the people that called in. Gave me a lot to think about.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And I'm going to be continuing this series interviewing local elected leaders. So this Wednesday at 11, my guest will be Michael Hunter, who's the tribal chairman for the Coyote Valley Band of Pomo Indians. And in the near future, tribal governments in Mendocino will become the county's largest employer. So I'm going to talk with Michael about his work as a local elected tribal leader, what it's like for tribal governments as sovereign nations to interface with local, state, and federal agencies, and the impact of their ambitious economic and cultural development work. So that's going to be very interesting. We're going to branch out from our local county supervisors now and start talking to other electeds. And we're also working on getting department heads here to talk with you and be available for your calls. And I'm also looking at speaking with the CEO in October. So that's Michael Hunter will be on this Wednesday, the day after tomorrow at 11. Right here on KZYX. And you are listening to us here on KZYX Philo, 90.7 FM, KZYZ, Willits and Ukiah, 91.5 FM, and Fort Bragg at 88.1 FM. We are your Mendocino County Public Broadcasting, listener-supported community radio. Stay tuned next for Fresh Air with Terry Gross, followed by, after that, Music Without Borders at 1 p.m., hosted by Richard Spencer. And after 3 o'clock, Reveal, a weekly investigative news program from the Center for Investigative Reporting. I am Alicia Bales. Thank you so much for listening. And again, thank you so much for your calls. I'll be back with you on Wednesday morning with Michael Hunter.